Welcome everyone to the Q&A session for our upcoming course, Trickster Training Mystery School, the 8-month journey to animate your life and our world with myth, creativity, and astrological magic. This is Lisa Bonnies, and it's my honor to be hosting this hour-long Q&A call for the Shift Network, where we'll explore the teachings of Caroline Casey and address questions about her upcoming 8-month course, Trickster Training Mystery School, which begins Wednesday, April 19th, just a couple days from now. Later, I'll explain how you can participate in this course, even if you can't attend the live sessions. But first, I want to introduce our guest. Caroline Casey is the creator and host of the Visionary Activist Show on Pacifica Radio Network. Her guests are leading contributors to a culture of reverent ingenuity, and it has been called one of the best radio shows in America. She's studied and practiced in many mystery schools, acquired a BA from Brown University in myth, fairy tales, and world religions, and studied Grail legend with late great mythologist Joseph Campbell and cahooted with late Jungian trickster James Hillman. Try saying that 6 times fast. The rest of her fascinating bio can be found at tricksterschool.com. And in just a few minutes, we're going to open up for your questions. But first, I want to welcome Caroline, who will begin our call by sharing some fascinating stories, including a mystery scouting report from her recent world travels. Welcome, Caroline. It's so good to talk to you again.
Ah, thank you. That's right. I've just gotten back from Egypt, an amazing journey through time and space. And that's why I did express to the Shift team going, oh, I've never been so prepared or enthused in ways known to me and mysterious to me to convene, you know, these councils unfurling before us. But, for instance, you know, all journeys are cumulative. I mean, our lives are made of journeys, inward and outward, and our whole life is an art form. And right now is a particularly powerful time to reflect on our many journeys. But so I got back on Good Friday, and that's right, with my cold that I got on the plane. Excuse the cold. But this morning I woke up in Egypt. I was absolutely in Egypt when I woke up, going, oh, the room was in Egypt. Everything was in Egypt. It's such a powerful, palpable thing. And wherever we journey, there are beings that really want to come and cahoot with us. So this whole journey, you know, Jupiter is soaring overhead at night, presiding over the night sky, and I was out in the Bedouin desert in the Sinai. Whoa, amazing, the power of the desert, you know, the origin stories of so many teachings that begin with a liberating impulse. We remember that salam and shalom, is meaning peace, is not the absence of war, it's the presence of oneness. Ah. And so all night as I slept under the sky with Jupiter blazing and the waxing moon and Jupiter right on my Saturn, which is the part of me that teaches and guides, I'm going, oh, it's really great. So it is powerful. And you'd asked when we were backstage, you know, what about these retrogrades? What about Mercury retrograde? And why I'm enthused to cahoot now. Now is sufficient. And then also for anybody who wants to join in this navigation, a planet retrogrades. It's an illusion. It means to us, on Earth, it appears to be moving backwards. So Mercury stationed and retrograded on Palm Sunday on April 9th, which was the bombings in Egypt, which is, I was there for that. Not right there. We were completely safe, and that's one of the things we like to teach, how to travel in dangerous places and be completely safe. But as Mercury stationed to retrograde, to retrieve ancient wisdom to address the world's crisis, its image, because there are metaphors for each degree of the zodiac, was a widow weeping at an open grave. And so as Mercury stationed on Palm Sunday on April 9th in Egypt, and there I was, widow at an open grave. And so Mercury in Taurus, Venus's sign, that we're going to honor Venus, there's so many things to do, so many voices that want to come join and support us all, represented by these planetary intelligences. But so it's stationed retrograde. So what is a retrograde and how do we navigate with it? It really does want us to retrieve ancient wisdom, to reconsider, to reheal, to reconnect. So it is not really modern and why people go, oh no, Mercury retrograde, things don't work. It's like, no, it's just that what if we lived in a wise contemplative culture as we want to be in, we would have time to reflect. And when people say, oh no, Mercury retrograde, it just means that people often aren't doing what they want to be doing, so they're distracted. So Mercury retrogrades, all the way back, you know, stationing on Palm Sunday, it goes direct on May 3rd. Venus, that's right, I think you got to see the photo, fantastic photo of me on a camel welcoming Venus back from the underworld, the heliacal rise of Venus from Mount Sinai. that was like a powerful tarot card going, there I was on Mount Sinai on a camel with the heliacal rise of Venus. You can see little,
wow.
Venus was much bigger in real life than in that photograph, but it was like she was blazing. And Venus had been in Aries, woof woof, and then she retrograded all the way back to late Pisces and stationed right there. You can see it in the photo. She stationed at 26 plus Pisces, which is the harvest moon, a vision of peace. So Venus snapped her fingers and said, wait, before I go forward, which she just did on April 15th, just now, let me go back to retrieve something, a vision of peace, which you all need in the modern world. Jupiter retrograde until June 9th, so all of us retrieving, retrieving, you know, everything from all past mystery traditions that are needed now to bring alive in our own unique, customized, trickster way, you know, and Venus, Mercury stationing, you know, on Widow weeping at an open grave, saying, you humans, you need to go backwards in order to go forwards. You know, your nearest exit may be behind you. Go back to these guiding traditions, you know, to gather them, to bring them alive, you know, and that's what we're doing now. It's also what we're going to be doing in the 8-month course, to bring all of these guiding wisdom systems alive. So feel free to ask me a question while I cough and blow my nose.
Well, I'm loving what you're saying here. I wonder if you can be just a little bit more specific about what exactly is so, everybody's so afraid of Mercury retrograde. You know, people who don't even know anything about astrology will go, oh, Mercury in retrograde. What exactly does that mean, and do we need to be afraid of it?
Oh, we want magic is a willingness to cooperate with everything. Everything. So we go, what does it want? You know, and it's also, you know, part of what we reclaim, which is wondering. You know, when we're in the Holy Week time, you know, and there are two words for why in Hebrew. One is, you know, like, why? Kind of a complaining thing. And the other one is, to what purpose? And when Jesus is on the cross and says, oh God, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? He doesn't use the first why. He uses the second why, meaning, to what purpose hast thou forsaken me? And with all these retrogrades, we go, to what purpose? You know, what wants my attention? So it's a great time to be full of wonder. Even when we wonder, we kind of hold our arms up in a graceful curve. We're wondering, even can do that together now, and for the magic of our telepathy here, turns our body into a, you know, a beseeching chalice of inquiry. Wonder attracts revelation, going, why, to what purpose? So Mercury retrograde, it happens 3 times a year, you know, and we want to distinguish between, you know, superstition, and guidance, you know, to what purpose, what wants to happen here. So Mercury is retrograde in Taurus, which is animism, reminding us to talk to everything, rocks, plants, animals, all of that, And, you know, some people say, I love a fellow colleague teacher, Martine Prechtel, who says, was the oil invited to become plastic? Was the plastic invited to become a computer? You know, oh, human, reclaim your manners. And so there is a quality of Mercury retrograde in which those things that our species has been rude to, you know, here's another R-E word, rebel. And we go, right, that we mend our manners, going, would you like to? How about here? But, you know, if something's not working, we go, well, what wants to happen? And it's one of our big themes as we begin with Venus and Mercury is stationing on in Venus's sign. It's beautiful. Venus just went direct just now, and she's returned from the underworld. Venus, the restoration of intimacy to the world. And Venus says, dedicated acts of beauty invite power into the world. So even with the Mercury retrograde in Taurus, it says, you know, to make a little altar, to make even just by the placing of by the placing of this flower in this vase, you know, may this quality of power enter the world. It's highly effective for our ancient, animistic, wise selves right now. Something deep wants our attention that is deeper than the modern world, you know, that is all exploding and crazy. And, you know, we are, in keeping with Trickster, we lighten up to deepen down. And part of my journey through Egypt made it really clear that all the modern players have always been here in antiquity. There's always been a Daesh, meaning what we call, what the Western press misnames ISIS. I went to the ISIS temple, and she'd like us to reclaim that quality.
I believe it.
So all the modern players have always been here in antiquity. You can see that, you know, there's the originating spark of religion, and then there's a force that comes in and wants to destroy the past and all past things, you know, but never with so much technological capacity for cruelty and destruction as we have now. Remembering, Mercury retrograde is about remembering. Remembering, Sir Herbert Reed said, only those serving an apprenticeship to nature can be trusted with technology. And so much of what's happening in the, in the modern world is a crisis washing up on the shores of the ancient world of what could heal it. And that's part of what I've been kind of retrieving. So Venus is just back. I love, you know, when I was contemplating these series of councils, this course, going, it's a long time. It's a big commitment. And then I looked at the guiding narrative story, so much larger than myself or anybody, and going, no, this wants to happen. Venus is just back. We begin on Wednesday when the sun enters Taurus, Venus's sign, the restoration of intimacy to the world. So each series of councils is the honoring of a planetary intelligence within us, out there in the world, what happens when we don't, but how do we cultivate it? So I go, ooh, how perfect to begin with Venus. And she wants that. She's just returned with a vision of peace. She's about to enter Aries, which is may beauty, you know, have her kick butt, reassuming cultural leadership dynamic. There we go. You know, and Jupiter is in Libra, Venus's sign, retrograde until June 9th, part of our journey and our course, to reclaim all the mentors, all the people, all the studies we've ever done. I'll also be guiding some research into the history of, you know, of not just Western mystery schools, but, you know, syncretism is a sacrament, so it's like Sufism, Aikido, everything, brewing it all together, going, there we go. And with actual research that I'm doing, I'm reading some fantastic books to bring alive for the team that are really useful, what wants us. And absolutely inviting us to think of our lives as though they are spiritual mystery novels in which each affinity, each Venusian affinity, you know, that we like a color or a culture or a poem or a craft, you know, is a clue worthy of honoring and cultivating, and that the world really wants us all, you know, to engage deeply in the art form of the beautiful art form of our lives. The first night I arrived in Egypt, it really was like the Egyptian Book of the Dead. For some reason, I couldn't sleep, and I had the image that I'll be animating during the course, you know, that image of when the soul, there's the ba, the body, and the ka, the spirit. And it goes through a series of initiations. I'm going to be animating the Egyptian Book of the Dead, in which our hearts are weighed against a feather. And there's Anubis, jackal-headed god, right? And on the other side of the scale is a crocodile, who, if our hearts are heavier than a feather, we'll eat them. You know, but we go, well, Judgment Day in tarot and everything, you know, is not just once, it's ongoing. And so in some curious way, the first night I was in Egypt, my heart was weighed against a feather, and like some entheogen, I went through everybody I've ever known and everything I've ever studied and everything. It was just very strong. And I go, and where do I want to make redress? And where has somebody done me harm that I want to bless them? Where do I want my heart to be like a feather? Well, it went on all night. It was really powerful. It's like, wow, that was, these myths are alive. It's all stirring. Again, cooperators are standing by, right? Everything wants to help us. And we go, right, our heart's lighter than a feather. Huh. It's a good aspiration. And I have many things arriving, caravans are arriving, because I got a fantastic papyrus that I'll be able to share with everybody through the miracle of Zoom video. We'll be convening by video, which is pretty fun. And right. I can show everybody going, here's the ancient papyrus of our hearts being weighed against a feather. And there's Anubis, and there's the crocodile, right? And there's the initiation. But it's not the way we tricksterize it. None of this is meant to be grumpy. It's meant to be an incentive. And as Robert Bly, another great ally, collaborator, mentor, said, you know, we can all, you know, get eaten by the witch or eaten by the crocodile, you know, in the fairy tale or the myth. You know, it happens. But if it goes on for years, we'll get pretty thin, right? So it's like the restoration of manners to ourselves and our species. And then how do we dedicate to being agents of liberating blessing, you know, and we make our dedications and we, you know, pray to be held to them and we blow it, you know, and then we get back on and go there. But going to be agents of liberating blessing and cool response in a hot, reactive world. So what we're engaged in, you know, now and in our councils, it wants to happen. I can feel the tug of it, you know. So, yeah. And just everything's real and everything's like a tarot card. So there I was on Mount Sinai, no easy climb. It was very cute. I was with just a very tiny group of people who were, I'd have to say, were in pretty darn much better shape than me. And so we started off climbing Mount Sinai, and I go, ooh, perhaps I should have trained a little more for this. This is quite rigorous. But a mystery, often it's very crowded. We were the only people on the mountain. There were two people coming down from Ecuador. We're from Ecuador. But usually it's hundreds and hundreds of people. So we started off pre-dawn. And I remember looking back, and there was, I could just see the soft, white, glowing nose of a camel and behind us. And our wonderful guide, Dr. Rabia, said, the camel and his young boy, they know somebody's going to get tired because they're there, right? And I was like, okay, tum, 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 tum. And then somebody said a slightly snippy, rude thing to myself. And rather than react, I go, oh, camel, camel, like calling a taxi. And so then camel, and the camel's name was Michael Jackson. It was very cute. And so there's that great picture. And so the camel takes you part of the way up, and then you go 780 more very steep steps. To the top, but people have done that since Moses, you know, a pilgrimage site of tremendous resonance. So that's perfect retrograde. You want the resonance, the morphic field of people like ourselves who've been engaged in pilgrimage, you know, in an interior way or exterior way. And part of the retrogrades right now, of which we have a plethora, is that all outer journeys are inwardly accessible. You know, and the collective wealth of humans, but not just humans, plants and animals, also powerful. Part of my enthusiasm for this course that begins as the sun enters Taurus, going Venus, Venus, right, you know, salam, shalom, the presence of oneness, let's all be agents of that, our lives, our art forms, how beautiful, and Pluto stationing to retrograde right then, and then it retrogrades the next morning, very early in the morning. We go, ooh, deepening, deepening. And Pluto's image is a hidden choir is singing. We go, right, cooperators are standing by. You know, whatever we dedicate to is willing to dedicate to us, forming these partnerships. And Venus says, it's perfect that we can't handle our own personal problems or collective problems by ourselves. It's by ourselves that got us into this pickle. You know, that's why we want to make alliances, you know, in tossing our little line into the past and feeling the connection going, whoa, right. And remembering, you know, when you said about Mercury retrograde and people get all freaked out, we call that superstition, really. Well, it's complex. I did once buy a computer when Mercury was retrograde and it was possessed. So, you know, we test everything. That means you repair it and you rewire the house and you return the thing, you R-E-R-E-R-E. But it wants us to, again, remember beauty, remember kinship, you know, to be agents of what we love in our own personal lives and collective lives. And Pluto stationing says, ooh, a deep journey. And again, how wonderful to journey with people, to have a pilgrimage, to have councils. You know, I often quip, you know, we can be lonely on our own, but it takes a group in which to be alienated. But to have a group of fellow teammates in which we weave a net of encouragement for each person's quirky, unique self, going, Ollie, Ollie, and Comfrey, your unique trickster self, completely welcome here, where the truth can be said without fear, where trickster is welcome, where to and fro is completely welcome. You know, part of the kind of original creation myth I made up, but I like it a lot, is long before there were humans, there was trickster, who sets the whole shebang going with a sizzle of lightning. Poof! You know, and that sizzle of uniqueness and liberating lightning runs through everything, every flora and fauna, every plant, every rock, every animal, every creature. And every now and then it gets imprisoned, right, by orthodoxy or grumpiness over here. And so it's learned how to escape. And it sizzles into each one of us right now, awaiting this time of quickening where we so need it. And it knows a lot of things, this part of us inside. It knows how to escape gracefully in a way that is not only accomplishes its own escape, but is willing to liberate even the tyrannical imprisoner as well. And that's where we drive, you know, derive from fairy tales and folk things and nature itself. Where do we get the compassionate trickster? You know, and that really does take cultivating, you know, but we find it in Scheherazade, you know, in the Arabian Nights, the woman, powerful storyteller. We want to do a lot with the power of storytelling, and may we all be great storytellers right now. I learned so much. I'm always learning a lot. I learned so much from this journey about the power of story. But Scheherazade, remember, she liberates women, liberates the land, but is willing to liberate even the tyrant who has hardened his heart. Same with High John the Conqueror in the South, again, liberates the slaves, but is willing to liberate even the slave owner. And so cultivating this power of story is so important. And as I was journeying through time on this extraordinary Egypt journey, it was like, wow, it's so rich, and it will be with me forever, and certainly through this course. So from Cairo, we went to Wadi Natrum. Wadi means valley, and Natrum is salt. And our great guide, Dr. Rabia, said, well, in the time of the pharaohs, the peasants here were mining salt for embalming. And then the early Christian mystics came along in the desert, you know, and they said, here's a better story. We will give you food and things, and you don't have to work so hard. And they go, that is a better story. And then he said, well, right now, the monasteries, which we visited of antiquity, St. Catherine's Monastery, so many stories everywhere. And he said, right now, the monasteries don't have so much to feed the local people. So the Muslim Brotherhood, toxic mimic of initiation story, comes along right now as they're doing, you know, and says, we have a better story for you, right? So again, it's all about story, and maybe the liberating story rather than the toxic mimic, the story that looks liberating but is really imprisoning. And that's why my dedication to all of us is that we cultivate our capacity for storytelling, because nothing is more important, how we tell ourselves our own story, and also our capacity to tell stories that are inclusive. Come this way. Come this way. Here's a story. Here's a story about inner cities blooming and enough for all people. And one of the things also that, you know, is so strong, again, as all teachings are coming together and all the quotes I've ever loved and everything kind of syncretizing, Abe Lincoln said a lot of great things, but I also love that he said, "I care not for any man's religion whose dog and cat are not the better for it." I go, "Go, Abe. Go, Abe." Because one of the things about traveling anywhere, really, but especially in Egypt, many beautiful things, many powerful spiritual things. Oh, but the animals. You know, at St. Catherine's Monastery, all, you know, dedicated to, but all the cats were starving. And so only I was taking my meal and my scraps and everything and going, but the cats were, you know, insane with hunger. And I go, "Oh, let me not die from cat scratch fever for my ministry." Going, "Here you go, cats, here you go." And I go, "It would be so simple. You know, some wonderful cat woman, you know, could endow St. Catherine's Monastery with a simple thing, going, here, just feed the scraps to the cats, for goodness sake, you know." And at the Temple of Isis, you know, the cats are starving. And I go, "This could be so simply remedied." Anyway, I have a lot of ingenious ways to address this. But it reminds us that, you know, it's part of healing our manners. I care not for any man's religion whose dog and cat are not the better for it. I like that as a standard. Not to finger wag, but to encourage, yeah.
Wow.
So I can keep going.
If you've got more that you want to talk about with your scouting report, that's fine. Otherwise, we can take questions. That's up to you.
Well, I've got both. Let's dive into questions and to and fro, and then I've got plenty of things to say here too.
Okay, cool. Well, then let me let everyone know how to ask a question. If you are on the phone, you can hit *2 to speak directly with Caroline. If you're on the webcast, you can type your question in. And in the meantime, let me also let you know once again the website so you can follow along. It's TricksterSchool.com. There's no spaces between those words. Again, the name of the course is Trickster Training Mystery School. It begins Wednesday, April 19th, and it's 8 months long. Once again, TricksterSchool.com. So let's see what kind of questions we have here.
Let me also interject. Because it's Trickster School, when they were proposing this, going, 8 months, that's very long. And I go, all right, but we have breaks. We have quirky breaks in which there will be themes to take through, but it's not like, oh my God, 8 months. It's like, no, here, and then we take a little break. Anyway, it's quirky.
Yeah. It also sounds like really great guidance for the rest of the year. It sounds like you're going to really sort of hold our hands and say, okay, well, this is what's happening, and this is how we can deal. And so it sounds like a really great way to spend the rest of the year.
No, I'm looking forward to it. I'm so glad I'm taking this course myself. Yeah, exactly. It's like, whoa, here we go. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we have a question here from, I believe it's pronounced Kieran. I apologize if I screwed that up. The question is, how can we become more aware of trickster energies in daily life?
Perfect. Well, again, even thinking of it, even asking that question increases it. And it's also part of, you know, as we begin with Venus, which is over and over again, I learn, and we keep learning, we keep relearning and relearning, and retrogrades are for relearning what we already know. If we all did what we knew, we'd all be in fantastic shape. So what I know is when there's a conundrum, you know, or kerfuffle, inviting. Venus is the art of inviting. Invite in trickster. Oh, trickster, come on in and resolve this in a way that liberates everybody and makes us bark with laughter. And it works. It really, really works. You know, whenever we forget, one example, but there are many. And it's like remembering what we know. So there was a conference of astrologers, and one of them had gone to Fox News and given all these kind of right wing reports about how astrologers thought these right wing things, and I was like, you know, and then they were going to convene at the end of the conference, and Fox News was coming to film them, and I was like, and I go, no, remember your own teachings, Caroline. Release harumphitude, composting harumphitude, invite in trickster in a way that will be witty. And there were two people who were particularly right-wing. And both of them, it was back in the era when people wore watches, both of them, their watches stopped, and they were late and didn't make it on stage. And I was like, ha, 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 ha. Another wonderful principle is Uranus, a kind of representing trickster energy, you know, and ingenuity to bring all things alive in a fresh, new, liberating way. Everything yearns to be liberated and to be our dance partner. So the last idea is Uranus's ingenuity. It's coyote, it's raven, it's synchronicity. You know, we are the molecules with which the big story speaks to itself. And the last ideas associated with it are democracy, equality, synchronicity. Trickster as keeper of democracy. And so I wondered out loud, it's sometimes good to do that, I wonder, what do these last ideas have to do with each other? Democracy, equality, synchronicity. And really, no sooner did I wonder that out loud than circumstances arranged themselves to make it very clear that our manner of relating, and when we relate to others in an equal fashion, meaning we all have different roles on stage and backstage, but the fundamental form of intimacy is straight across with respect. When we relate to each other with equality, the rate of synchronicity increases dramatically. Now, believe nothing, entertain possibilities. It's something for everybody to play with and make it one's own. But the implications of that are really great, meaning we, ally etiquette, if we treat each other well, which is, does not necessarily mean being nice, because the word nice comes from nescient, which means ignorant, but with respect, which means to look again, re-again, spect look, then the rate of synchronicity increases. So the dementors of doom and the technologies of destruction may have more money, more lawyers, more missing the whole point of life, but we, if we treat each other well, have synchronicity. Then we're danced into place, connected with all the right people at the right time. We open the book to the right passage. We have the conversation that's liberating. You know, and so it's very heartening for the transformation of culture. And that's why ally etiquette is so essential, that we embody our principles. You know, and since Trickster loves freedom, which is the freedom to be an agent of liberating, we are disobedient to tyranny, we are obedient to our dedication to collective well-being. You know, and again, if we treat each other well, and that's why if we love freedom, to react to anything is not free. You know, all these people in the news going, and what's your reaction to that? And it's like, how about a response? A response. reaction is prison. Response is freedom. And so what I love doing with myself and others in a jolly, team of all of us befoibled superhero tricksters, you know, stumbling gracefully into the future, here we go, on our caravan of dreams, you know, as we are dedicated to cultivating an ever larger repertoire of responses, then we are tapping into nature's evolutionary genius. So a reaction is imprisoning, a response is liberating to everyone. And why, you know, to share with all of you, and all of us get to share as well, I've been studying the philosophy of Aikido for a long time. I so admire it. And now, finally, I'm doing the physical lessons. And in the very first lesson, the teacher said, the more balanced and accomplished we become, the greater our capacity for compassion. I'm like, ooh, I love this. Because then we're not reacting. You know, it's like in Aikido, it says, do not stare at your enemy's eyes. He will mesmerize you. Do not stare at his weapon. He will terrify you. Create your own magnetic field. And then you can be anywhere you want. You know, and see, then even we get to throw into the cauldron our addiction to having an enemy. It's all a dance partner, right? And that's part of the Trickster guidelines. We'll see if we have time to even get those. But when I came down from Mount Sinai, right, I go, all right, Moses went up and he came down with grumpy commandments. you know, thou shalt not, which were even stolen from the Egyptian Book of the Dead. There was 101 professions. I have not done this. I have not done this. And the Old Testament kind of steals them. And I mean, we're, you know, this is definitely for heretics. A heretic was an honorific term that meant free thinker. And it was a term of praise in early Christianity, right? And so it's a band of heretics, free thinkers. Right, and orthodoxy means, ortho means straight, like orthodontistry, straight teaching. And we go, yeah, we like our teachings curvy. So part of the guidelines, you know, is that you know, so I got to come down from Mount Sinai, you know, not with commandments, finger waggy, blah, 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 but with trickster guidelines. And that also comes from Aikido and, I mean, everything. In Aikido, it says when somebody attacks you, don't block, which is kind of, like putting your arm there, guide, which is whoosh, whoosh. It's the spiral, you know, cultures with spirals. Spirals is nature's evolutionary genius that resolves conflict. Whenever conflicting forces come together in nature, spirals ensue. And so anything, you know, when you see cultures with spirals, you know they knew something about peace, you know, about resolving conflict, you know, about the Aikido thing. So you don't block, you know. And this means we tease it into our conversation. When somebody goes grr, 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 we don't go grr, grr, grr back. We go swoosh, and here's a better story, and here's a better story. It's like wonderful colleague John Michael Greer, really learned druid, says, if you want people to get nothing done but conflict, convince them they're on one side of something, and you will only get hot conflict. What two needs is three, which is the liberating story, the unifying story, right? And the world needs us to be able to be agents of not reactive, not hot, not to be snookered into polarity, which is so easy out there. It is not. That's bad. That's doing it. We go, we critique, we understand deeply, we discern, and then we are agents of liberating the circumstance, of being agents of cool response in a hot circumstance. You know, and this takes some. Somebody said trickster training. Tricksters don't need training. And it's like, oh, yes, we do. You know, because it's like anything. We want to, you know, expand our repertoire and see ourselves doing this. So when hot situations come along, you know, it's in our bones and our mythology to go right swoosh. A great teaching. A friend of mine was a dedicated practitioner of, contact improv dance. He was a big guy, 6'7", and he was walking across a crossway in Baltimore, and a car hit him, going like 40 miles an hour. But he was so skilled that he did not resist, right? He contact improv'd with the car. He rolled right over it, right over the top, and landed on his feet.
Wow.
Completely okay. The car was crushed, right? The roof of the car was crushed, but he was fine, causing everybody around to burst into applause, going, that was fantastic, do it again. You know, and again, there's many ways in which things are coming at us, right? And so how do we verbally, metaphorically, you know, wittily and physically, all of our bodies, learn how to contact improv with that, how to Aikido with that? How do we blend in all of the wonderful liberating traditions from every place? You know, so it's Sufi wolf and Aikido alchemy, and I've been trained for this, you know, since I started on my little path as an astrologer and as a little tiny teen in 1970, and that's why I go, it's time to pull it all together here.
Yeah.
It wants to happen. It wants to happen. And so the trickster guidelines also, again, that we practice, you know, and that's why I love practicing with everybody, because we're all in this thing together, you know, and we get to file scouting reports going, here's something that didn't go so well. How could it have gone better? Let's, you know, see, Mercury retrograde is a redo. It's a redo. I used to have a section in my radio show called What I Wish I'd Said Last Week, you know, and we go, right, we redo the thing. Like, how could that have gone better? And therefore, our dedication to the next time something happens like that, we redo the thing. And we can be witty and spicy and full of blessing, but it's not boring. It's sizzly. We're allowed to set in motion. We blend in ritual magic here and the power of blessing. We're allowed to set in motion anything of which we ourselves would be the happy recipients. You know, may it be, you know, that all humans have an increasing empathic experience of the effect of their actions on others. That's a big thing. And so we question ourselves, would each one of us, would we be willing to have an empathic experience of the effect of our actions on others? All the good stuff, all the plastic straws, all the mean words, all the whatever, and we go, sure we would. Let it rip. You know? And another crucial part of trickster guidelines for us as effective agents of beauty and democracy and change and kindness to animals and peace in the world and harmony in our own neighborhoods. And all of that is, you know, whatever we speak to in another is the part of them we're inviting to dance with the corresponding part of ourselves. I know this is true. These everything I'm putting out here, it's like I've worked this stuff. I've blown it, and I've gone back to it. And with radio, when I have a grumpy guest, I go, no, don't. No. Okay, speak to the part of them you want to come out. Oh, it worked. You know, and that's when we have a kerfuffle, you know, which is why we don't want to judge others. We want to discern and diagnose and critique, because we're not like, oh, it's all great, because it's not all great. But diagnosis, if we put a hyphen there, dia means everywhere, and gnosis is wisdom. So all diagnoses are in order to summon the wisdom to heal something. So we do want to be spicy. But the reason we want to discern but not judge, because when we judge another, and even ourselves, you know, finger-waggy thing, we're inviting the least evolved part of them to dance with the least evolved part of us, and it's just never pretty, right? So it's like, hello, I see this part of you. And that's why astrology is such a genius and liberating language of intimacy and effective artfulness in our lives. Because each planet, and that's what we get to do in the councils, each planet represents a living quality of intelligence that resides within each one of us in a unique way, and we can go through everybody's Venus and everybody's Mercury and everybody's whatever, that connects us to the world, right? So I love the sequence of the councils. We begin with Venus, you know, restoration of intimacy and beauty. And each person is a unique experiment. Venus is in a different angle, a different sign for everybody, you know, but we also have the collective dynamic. Venus has gone back now, as we begin our journey together, into Pisces, the sign of her exaltation. She's gone back, you know, to reclaim the vision of peace, to bring it forward, you know, and language grants us access to the realm it describes. If we can speak of it, we can journey there. Not only that, but if we can speak of it, we're cultivating it, that little part of all of us right now that is Venus, that knows about beauty and sassiness and spiciness and wisdom, and we have come to make the world more beautiful. She within all of us is quickening. And in Mesoamerica, we're going to involve all cultures. Venus is Quetzalcoatl. It's a guy, you know. So we love all the world mythologies, all the wisdoms. And each person in this council, who brought what? Who brought what to this renaissance? You know, I brought this and I brought that. And we all need each other. And that's why we have a structure. We have a structure to our journey. And how much structure, how much improv. But it's also like, well, who shows up and where do we want to go with that? So
right.
With that in mind, maybe another question, oh, great ally, Lisa.
Well, let me take a minute here just to talk a little bit more about the course before we go to another question, because we have time for more questions, so hang tight, folks. I want to mention again, the name of the course is Trickster Training Mystery School, and this is going to be a life-changing 8-month journey under Carolyn's expert guidance, where you'll be able to free yourself from outdated stories and become a joyful catalyst for change by opening to mythological magic, unpredictable wisdom, and your trustworthy intuition. And my cat's chiming in on that as I speak. Once again, the 8-month course takes place. Yes, she's loving it, and she's
and
not starving.
That's right. And your cats and dogs are welcome to join.
Yes, exactly.
For free.
And so the course is starting this Wednesday, April 19th, and if you can't join us live, that's fine. You're not going to miss any of the teachings. You will receive both audio and video recordings. You'll get transcripts and all course handouts on your course homepage. And also, we offer a no-risk money-back guarantee on all of our courses, giving you a full 2 weeks until May 3rd in this case to make sure that you absolutely love it. Also, all participants are welcome to... Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And then all participants are welcome to connect on a private Facebook community group so you can stay connected with one another. Also, everyone who registers receives the Trickster Training Mystery School bonus collection, free toys. One is called Trickster Medicine. This is Caroline's sold-out National Bioneers Conference presentation with Dr. Andrew Weil. You will also receive one called Vernal Equinox. This is two audio recordings from Caroline's Just Now presentations. And you will also receive Woofy Women audio collection from the Visionary Activist Radio Show Archives. And somebody here asked a question about whether there will be opportunities to write for others to read, and that's where your Facebook community group will come in handy. And will the class be interactive in terms of discussion? Caroline will do Q&A, and there's also breakout groups, so you'll be able to talk to other people in the course. So before we go any further, Caroline, what are you most looking forward to sharing in your upcoming course?
Well, just to riff off that question, will there be opportunities to offer things? Yeah, we have our council. The Facebook page is pretty fabulous, and there are, I know, a lot of people who've already signed up who are in other time zones. Wonderful mythological people in England and Brazil and stuff, and so they listen to the recordings. But it's all telepathic, and then also people can certainly send me things that I can also integrate into the formal presentation as well. So yes. Crafting and writing, and each person not having to, but if people have projects that they want to complete and dedicate to in these 8 months, happy to have this serve as an incubation for writing things. Absolutely. So, yeah, many things. And again, we're structured, but we're also improv according to what's needed and what's wanted. It's a council of tricksters going, how about this and how about that? So highly responsive. So, yes.
Okay.
And so I'm wildly enthused because there is so much going on, and part of the storytelling craft, there's a lot of craft to storytelling, and I've been studying for quite a while, and to bring that forward, and then people who also have things to contribute as well, who brought what. But part of the beauty now is Pluto stationing, death and rebirth, and we'll go to all the Pluto gods, you know, and all the different forms, and tracking everything back to its originating impulse. What did this want to be before it got hoodwinked or snookered or bamboozled or superstitious or whatever? Tracking it all the way back and then offering ourselves as fresh agents. So part of the beauty of Pluto, what's called squaring Jupiter, and again, people who know astrology, that's great. People who don't know astrology, also great, no problem. It guides me to be lucid and clear, and people are at any point welcome to go, what do you mean by that? But just to say this little bit of astrology here, Jupiter is squaring 90-degree angle to Pluto through much of our course, and it's how it begins. And years ago, a wonderful late great ally of mine, Jim Lewis, we cahooted a lot together, he said, look at Jupiter and Pluto, incredible for publicity. And I thought that was odd and possibly cheesy, you know, but I noticed it was true, so I had to go, well, why would this be true? So from my more mythological background, you know, Jupiter is storytelling, Pluto's death and rebirth. One of its primary totems is the phoenix, right? And so we all gather, like, what gets us through? What gets us through the underworld mythologically and from our own challenging journeys as well? What got us through when everything else fell apart? So the story of the phoenix, and so I research and find the hidden story. Before the phoenix bursts into flames and is reborn, she sings this beautiful, haunting song, and all of creation, I even get goosebumps when I say this, all of creation listens to the phoenix's song and is reminded, here's Mercury retrograde, reminded of what's really important, beauty and kindness and art and reciprocal blessing, all those things. And then she bursts into flames. So when I found, and is reborn. So when I found that, I go, okay, you know, we could say the phoenix got a lot of publicity. All of creation listened to her song, right? So for each one of us, as we begin this course, it's like, well, each one of us has a phoenix's song. And it says, you know, for those who want to get published or storytelling or expand their realm of influence, you know, wonderful. And if not, then not. Everything is, whatever's true is perfect. You know, but it says each one of us has a phoenix's song. And so there's a backstage whisper to each one of us right now that says, you know, what is your phoenix's song, and in what form would you sing it? Now, it doesn't want a snappy answer, right? It's a big wondering. It's like a koan, and that wondering will attract the answer, right? So that's part of my enthusiasm, that each one of us emerge as you know, with their own phoenix's song to contribute in whatever form they want to the collective world right now. And it means, there are as many ways of doing things as there are individual humans. By lighting a candle in your cave, and wafting it telepathically into the world, by getting a publishing contract, whatever one's affinity, that's the guideline. These desires were not placed in our hearts for frustration. They're a blueprint of what we're meant to be, to have, to do, to contribute.
Wow.
That's part of that. I could keep going, but perhaps we have other questions.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, we've got a few questions. Let me go to Lorena. She says, your energy and enthusiasm is so contagious, and I wonder about what you said about one's heart being heavier than a feather. Will your course help those of us whose hearts are chronically heavy?
Oh, yeah, because we're all in that thing together. That was my thing. And as I wandered around or was guided around Egypt, too, because, incredible wisdom, incredible technology, and incredible brutality. All cultures have their tyrannies, for sure. We don't glamorize anything. And I go, all right, here's all these kings that we revere, these pharaohs, and yet they're putting their feet on captives, and they're cutting people's tongues out, and they're just doing horrible things. It's like, how were their hearts lighter than a feather, I wonder? How did that happen? But yes, absolutely. Metaphors are the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world, right? So part of our trickster training is we have a magic backpack, and in it, and we practice every week, we have these essential things. One is a harumphitude composter, which is really important to employ. It folds into nothing, but you can pull it out at any time, and we put our harumphitude in it, and we turn the crank, and we compost it into nutrient, for clear communication. Because if we communicate while we're harumphy or judgy, it's not going to be pretty, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if we compost that and our community, and we really are pretty clean, then people will take anything, right? It's like if we mind somebody, if we've already gotten to a point of irritation, no matter how nicely we put it, excuse me, would you mind not doing that thing? Person will flip out. And
mm-hmm.
and that's why the Scorpio part of us often says, I was very polite to that person, and they flipped out. And we go, no, there's more going on. You were like nicey nice on the surface, but inside you were like, you are a dingbat, right? And people receive that, and they react to that. Remember,
right.
We like responsiveness. But if we're really pretty clean, if our hearts are light as a feather, one can say any true thing, and somebody will take it. And they'll go, huh. And there's nothing more wonderful than really doing a scary, truthful thing and having both people dance. And so there's many, many things, many metaphors, and I can draw, we can all draw, but I'm happy to, be the guiding, encourager here. Because I get flack, right? And what do we do with flack? And after a talk in which I was critiquing the Abrahamic religion somewhat, although I did meet with this fabulous rabbi, Rabbi White, who was so wonderful, a great rabbi, head of rabbinical studies at Georgetown. Somebody just thought I should meet him and brought him to my house, and what a great human he was, and now an ancestor. We got to invite ancestors to our council as well. And he was talking about Jewish magic and Egyptian magic, and he was a great scholar. And I said, well, you seem pretty playful. Let me run this by you. I said, I think of the Abrahamic religions as like shipwrecks on which barnacles and beautiful corals have grown. And he said, that's perfect. And I go, God, you are so fun. You are so fun. But after a talk, somebody came up who was a rabbi who was not so playful, and he said, I've never been so insulted in all my life. And I go, ah, but the evening is young. there's more coming. So sometimes trickster just, if they can liberate themselves, that will do in a pinch. But then somebody also came up and was like, ah, blah, 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 blah. And I go, okay, how about we hold hands, and we jump into this imaginary cauldron right here before us, and we say, if there's any part of either one of us that is not dedicated to collective well-being, may it be bubbled from us, right? And she said, are you serious? And I was like, no, I'm playful. And she was like, okay, let's do it. And we we imagined we held hands, jumping into the cauldron together, blah, blah, blah. And we kind of imagined that thing. And then she said, that was so cool. Right? And anyway, so we have a million tricks. Tricks are liberating. Tricks are liberating. And we accumulate these over our journey together so that we have a repertoire, an ever-expanding repertoire of liberating ways of being that lighten our heart. You know, again, we lighten up by in order to deepen down, right? So it's not nicey-nice. It's not light, everything's great. When it's not, it's fully informed and willing to work with everything in our own personal lives. And that's why people can, before the council, I really love this when people go, well, my neighbors are, you know, dingbats, and they do this terrible thing. And we go, well, what would be a fun exercise to transform this? And here's some things you might try and report back to us. And so that's where it gets really fun. You know, in some of the past courses, people are great. You know, and we're inviting the best, most playful trickster part of everybody to play, you know, and however we are is completely accepted and welcome in our all of our befoiblement. And, you know, people want homework. I'm like, homework, okay. So I gave one group, you know, work on a blessing for somebody who's done you harm. And they allowed me to reference this because they told me later, but it was like, oh, one woman said, I want to thank my horrible ex-husband because if he hadn't been as horrible, I might have stayed. And if he hadn't been as horrible, I would have never found out how strong I am. I'm like, oh, good woman, good for you. Another woman took it even deeper and said, I want to bless the Sinaloa heroin cartel because their product killed my son's best friend. And my son almost died of an overdose 2 days ago. And I go, whoa, I want to bless them back to innocence. I'm like, oh, team, we're doing it now. There we go. We're not fooling around. We ain't play acting now, children. And it's like, so it goes to some really, you know, and then to experience what that feels like, right? You know, and how might we be willing together, and that's why there's part of a group dynamic that's positive rather than constraining. That's our aspiration. You know, what if we were willing also as a group to throw into the cauldron our desire to punish and ladle out our desire to heal, you know, and we do it for our own personal lives and then spiral it on out into the collective. What if, you know, as a collective thing, we were willing to, you know, to give up our addiction to having an enemy, you know, to throw into the cauldron our desire to punish and be vindictive, you know, that this would, and ladle out our desire to heal, that would handle a lot. You know, and again, for every conundrum, we also, you know, in part of our dynamic, we come up with a blessing. You know, may all those complicitous in doing harm to the world, may their ingenuity be liberated and rewarded for doing something good. Right. You know, because I was in Egypt during the bombings, and it's like, wow, how people could be hoodwinked by a toxic story, a toxic mimic of initiation, into thinking that harming beings that they don't even know could possibly do any good. How did this happen? And how do we liberate people from that? And then we also really explore the wonderful concept of complicity. Not shame, not blame, but whatever's going on, we're contributing our chi to it. And once we realize that, we can withdraw our chi from a story and exhale it into a more desirable one. So there's terrorism, right? And then there's all those complicitous, you know, with doing jobs that are harming the water and the earth and the fire, you know, and being rewarded for it and well paid for it. And we go, well, we send everyone a blessing. May those, you know, doing harm in any form be liberated into doing good and being appreciated for that, you know. So
right.
we take it all on.
That brings up, we're actually almost out of time here. Do you have time for one more question that addresses what you were just talking about?
Definitely. I love
this. Okay. This is actually several people are asking a similar question, so I found the one that sort of capsulizes all of them. The question is, what do the stars tell us about the reign of these pirates who are plundering the poor to give to the rich? Is there a shift coming soon?
May we be part of that. There wants to be, you know, it's again simultaneity of stories. You know, I love that there was a psychological study that said to the degree to which people are ironic is the degree to which they can have the capacity for compassion. And I love that because it doesn't make sense at first. You go, irony is kind of a British put down thing. But to be ironic, you have to be holding at least two stories at once, usually what is and what should be, or what is and what people are pretending it is, right? And to be compassionate is to be holding ever larger multiple stories at once, going, oh, that's why they did that, because they're in that story, right? So right now, you know, we have dominance and cruelty, that have existed for a long time, but never with this technology of destruction so great and so much danger in the world to all life. You know, so it's like, oh, row, you bastards, whatever. But it's running out of resources. You know, it's collapsing, but it's taking so much life down with it. Underneath, you know, in this graceful curve is this other story, a renaissance of reverent ingenuity rising from the rubble. You know, so it behooves all of us to be inviters. You know, come on over from the thing that's going down to the thing that's coming up. And that's why what I love doing and have been doing for 20 years on the radio show is, you know, who brought what? Here's a problem. Who's doing an ingenious, beautiful solution? You know, and that's why we equip ourselves with, did you know? Nobody minds being asked, did you know, if we do it without attitudinal snark, right? Did you know? You know, we could have enough free energy for everybody, and then you delineate the thing. Did you know? No, I didn't know that. Nobody minds being asked, did you know? So the more informed we are. So this culture of reverent ingenuity, so it's neck and neck, right? It's a Kairos moment, which is why I'm ardent in my enthusiasm. Enthusos, again, a wonderful word. Enthusos means that which makes the divine within us dance. I'm enthused and feel dedicated, this wonderful Celtic phrase, to dree our weird, to play our role in destiny. So my role in destiny, one of them, we don't ever fully know, you know, but there was the desert and Jupiter on my Saturn. I go, right, dreeing my weird is to guide others to dree their weird, especially now at this Kairos moment in history where everything that everyone does, thinks, feels, acts, tips the balance towards life or death. You know, every piece of beauty, every poetry, everything, you know, every extended kinship, every willingness to partner, democratic animism. Again, if we were just sort of normal muggles, it would all be hopeless. But we go, no, everything's got to collaborate. You know, so whatever we love, we collaborate with the plants and the energy behind the plants and the animals and, again, trickster ingenuity that is coyote and raven and seeds that sprout after cataclysm, and it's nature's ingenious resilience, and it's the phoenix, and we ally ourselves with that, you know, that plucky capacity. And that's why the sky story is always so heartening and encouraging. You know, what encouraging is such a great word, that which feeds our heart. You know, and we do a lot with language, the etymology, again, looking things up in a good etymological dictionary, taking things backwards in time, takes us to where everything's alive. You know, the word privilege means private law. And you go, well, there you have it. But the etymology of charisma is great. It comes from charis, from which we get charitable, from which we get Eucharist. So charis, you know, from which we get Cordelia in Shakespeare, dedicated heart. So true charisma is a charitable heart, right? Not the false swagger. So we become adept at that which is the toxic mimic, which looks right, but it imprisons, and that which is the authentic, which liberates. And that's what we do with our language and our actions. You know, it's like a friend of mine says, you know, when people flatter you, they're paying you for what they're about to take. And we go, oh, that's fun and spicy. Flattery is a toxic mimic. Praise is a liberating, authentic nutrient, right? So we learn to cultivate our intuitions and our discernment to go, and yes, 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 that we're agents of authentic liberating. And all of creation is eager to cahoot. And that's why, as we begin with Venus, we don't have to source it all, but to invite in the backstage gods, you know, as experiments. You know, all of creation, all of powerful past wisdom teachings, all of past mythologies are backstage eating popcorn going, oh, my God, look at the humans now. I hope they invite us in. Because spiritual etiquette says we'd love to jump on stage into incarnational participation, but we have to be invited. And the purpose of art, one of the basic purposes of art, is to invite into the world what we need to partner with in order to restore harmony and heaven and ingenuity and keep as much life alive as possible as we go through this exhilarating time, right, where everybody needs their mission and their story and to dree their weird, yeah.
Wow, awesome stuff. This is just, as usual, this has been an amazing hour with you, Caroline. I want to thank everyone for being with us, and Caroline for sharing your beingness with all of us on the call today. Once again, Trickster Training Mystery School starts on Wednesday, April 19th, and you can visit tricksterschool.com to learn more and to register. And for those of you who have questions about registering, I see them on the webcast. If you have questions about registering or scholarships or any of that type of thing, go ahead and check out the website at support.theshiftnetwork.com, and that's where you can get all of those questions answered. Before we go, Caroline, do you have any final words for our listeners today?
Yeah, well, if what we're bringing forth, you know, resonates in your heart, you know, the path will open, right? It just, you know, take a step. For every step we take, we get drawn along three, and we go, it is appropriate, you know, it is synchronicity that we're all here now, and a delight to be incarnationally coinciding at this powerful time that is so where what I love so much and what resides in all of our hearts, trickster medicine, is the sine qua non, because it renders everything else effective, democratic, powerful. It involves, you know, indigenuity. All indigenous movements have always required pragmatic mysticism, you know, this rewedding of activism with animism, and that's what makes it work. And to align ourselves with that which is larger than ourselves is the greatest delight and effective, too. So, woof, woof.
All right.
Woof, woof, want to play. Woof, woof, want to play is that we're moving our emotional default setting to woof, woof, want to play. So, woof, woof, want to play. Woof.
And cooperators are standing by.
They are. Cooperators are standing by. Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you once again, Caroline, and thank you to everyone who joined us today. On behalf of all of us at the Shift Network, I wish you well and look forward to having you on this course or perhaps another one in the future. Have a great day, everyone.